Welcome to the Eco Right Speaks podcast, your conservative home for weekly climate news, interviews, points of view, and profiles of people leading on climate in local communities across the country. It's the Eco Right Speaks podcast, brought to you by the team at republicen.org. And now, here's your host, Chelsea Henderson.
Hello, and welcome to the Eco Right Speaks, your climate-focused podcast produced by the team at republicen.org. I'm your host, Chelsea Henderson, back from my 10-day bike ride along the Jordan Bike Trail in the country of Jordan. I'm a little jet-lagged, still very sore, and also bursting with enthusiasm and ideas for the rest of the year ahead. I'm not sure I could contain my enthusiasm talking to today's guest. Dora Lutz is an award-winning researcher and international speaker who educates and inspires audiences on how to grow their social impact. Using the principles of ESG, environmental, social, and governance, Dora has worked with small businesses, Fortune 100 companies, and even the United Nations as they leverage business models to create sustainable revenue sources and profound social outcomes. Listeners, I know ESGs is a bit of a hot-button issue, so I asked Dora to come on the show to break down what it means to us. What are ESGs, and how do they fit into a free market paradigm? That conversation is coming up next. Welcome back, listeners. My new best friend, Dora Lutz, is here to break down a topic that I have wanted to talk about for so long, ESGs. Dora, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I have, as I noted, been so interested in having someone just come on because I need us to slow the brakes, right? Mm-hmm. There is a lot of negative rhetoric around ESGs, and I don't even think people know what ESG stands for. So give us a little 101. What are ESGs? And then we can kind of get into, you know, where they're falling in the discourse.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about this. And I do think it's important, and we need a lot of voices and opinions in the conversation to be able to really let this be something that helps drive business towards climate action. So ESG really is nothing more than a framework. You can think about it as a scorecard that helps people look at a business and understand what is this organization doing as it comes to addressing climate risk? How effectively are they understanding the shifting expectations of their consumers? And then how ethically are they operating? So I like to think of ESG in its own right as basically a profit and loss statement that goes beyond just those two factors.
I love that. I think that makes it seem so much clearer. And, you know, just especially that part about expectation of consumers. This is not, ESGs are not something that the government has mandated that corporations do.
That's correct. There's no ESG law in effect. Now, there are laws and regulations that are coming forth that do touch on pieces of each of these individual factors. But in all honesty, if you looked at the Global Reporting Index list of things that they are suggesting we consider with ESG, a good portion of those are already there are already laws. There are already things that we're doing within our organizations, either because we want to and it's good business, or because we're already mandated to do so by our government.
So what are some practices that would fit in that ESG description?
Yep. So within the ESG factor, things that businesses are being asked to report on are their water usage, what they're doing with their waste. Are they putting it in a landfill? Are they reusing it? How much waste are they putting out in the first place? And then what are they doing from an emissions standpoint? How much pollution are they pumping out? Are they cleaning their air? Are they buying carbon offsets to justify some of the waste that they're producing? Really things that we would look at and say, okay, I understand that these are things the business is considering. And how are they trying to do better? Because a lot of the magic with ESG, it's not about the flat out quantity of waste that a business is creating. It's about the continuous improvement that they are doing to reduce those costs down the road.
Yeah, no, I was going to say that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, these are practices that more and more often consumers want from the corporations where they're spending money.
That's right. It comes from consumers. It comes from investors because they want the organization to be using their capital wisely. It comes from the communities who offer a license to operate.
Yeah.
And even from the supply chain, you know, it's coming from all areas. It is a true way to make sure that you are minimizing your costs and maximizing your income.
And so I know that I have a lot of friends who identify as left of center, who think that corporations do things to greenwash. So how do whatever the mechanisms are for ESGs that make them not enforceable is the wrong word, that make them real, right? Like, how are you ensuring or how can you believe that a company is doing the things that they say they're doing that are on the positive side?
Yes, I love that question. And it is a concern. There are some bad actors out there who are putting out 85-page reports that then don't actually indicate that they're making progress. So I actually, at one point in time, I was trademarking the tagline, no BS ESG, because I really want it to be something that is data driven. So there are things that I look at that anybody who thinks this is BS should be paying attention to. They need to be looking at a company's culture. Mm-hmm. Are they saying things about ESG that are in alignment with what all of their stakeholders want? Does it make sense for investors? Does it make sense for consumers? Does it make sense for the community? Then they have to go out and say, are they actually doing what they say they are doing?
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, if you say you care about water emissions, the amount of pollution you're putting out in the water, but then all of a sudden there are violations that would indicate otherwise, yeah. That's a clear indicator that something is greenwashy. So
yeah.
We as consumers and investors have to be really aware and pay attention to not only what the company is saying, but what are they actually doing?
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. And I know that my kids, my 20-year-old and almost 23-year-old, are the best at, well, mom, you shouldn't buy from this company because of X, Y, Z. You should buy from this company instead. And so I do think that with the availability of data today, it is so much easier to look to see what companies are doing, what they're saying, and then match it up with what they're doing than it would have been even 20 years ago.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
So where does the negativity come in? There's been a lot of negative rhetoric, and you know, this has been a little bit of a divide from the political parties, unfortunately. You know, I see it as ESGs as a very free market, not a cause of the free market, but what's the word I'm looking for? A response to the free market, right? Like having, you know, your consumers, your investors, as you were saying, having some expectations, that's what the free market is all about. So how has this negative rhetoric kind of taken hold? And then what do you do with your clients to kind of work around that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm not sure exactly how we got to the point where it's become so politicized. I think, you know, even just the simple fact of what you're doing, climate change isn't necessarily a political issue. I think people understand and see the trends that are happening and want to take action. A good portion of this, I do think, comes from the social side of things, where there are different takes on what is the right approach for society to take that's going to maximize the well-being for the most people. I think that that's what most of us really want, yeah. Is to maximize well-being for ourselves and the people we love and our communities. And we're just not always in agreement on the best way to do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think when you look at DEI instance, DEI, for example, a lot of the pushback on social issues within ESG has been, well, it's DEI. It's maximizing the well-being of one group at the expense of another.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at the actual standards, especially the Global Reporting Index standards, they're asking for pay equity. They just want people to be paid fairly. They want to make sure that the board is representative of the investors and the consumers that they serve.
Mm-hmm.
It's making sure that you have human rights policies that are ensuring you're not violating the well-being of somebody in your community or across the world. These are not crazy, stringent, unreasonable expectations. Yeah. But I don't think most people have done the work to really deeply understand what are these standards even asking.
Well, and people are scared of change, right? And so I don't know if you know this, but I have a book coming out in August that goes through the history of the politics of climate change. And, you know, I wasn't alive for this, but the Cuyahoga River caught on fire a bazillion times because people were just pouring pollution. And it was just people kind of took that for it was going to happen, right? We used to dump mad amounts of chemical solutions, byproducts into our rivers. We don't do that anymore because we have learned and we know that we can do better. We can do better for the societies that live on those rivers, for the people that rely on the water, because either they're drinking it or they're using it or they're taking the fish out of it or whatever. And so modernization is not something to be feared. And our executive director, Bob Inglis, he likes to talk about the lobby for the buggy whip, right? Like, how upset were they when automobiles became a thing because you no longer had a market for the buggy whip, right? But like, you can't stall progress because you are afraid of what that outcome is going to be. And we do all live in this world. And if anything, now we see the interconnectedness of it. And so if I'm buying a product and the person who made it is on the other side of the world and doesn't have really, you know, potable water and isn't, you know, there are no worker conditions, like, I don't want that product, right?
Right. So first off, I'm going to have to read that book because I think that would really answer that first question that you just asked me, because I don't know the answer. And I think that would be really interesting. But my add-on to your thought there around just evolution and change, what is business supposed to do? Business is supposed to create value for their constituents. Mm-hmm. So if the market is going away, if things are changing, being forward-looking and saying, what is the next challenge where we can add additional value? If it's not climate change, I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
There's so much opportunity. We're not lacking for problems and challenges. To me, it's the lowest hanging fruit for creativity and adding value. And I find that really inspiring.
You're listening to the EcoRight Speaks podcast, brought to you by the team at republicen.org. Download, listen, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, including Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Now, back to this week's episode.
Well, before we started recording, we were talking about personal responsibility versus corporate responsibility. And, you know, there are people that think that the corporations need to bear all the burden, and then there are people that think that people need to bear the burden for making these changes, especially as they relate to climate change. But I really think that, if anything, there's room for both. There's definitely room for both. And we can enhance our personal efforts when we're working and putting our money behind the companies that are also doing the work. You're nodding a lot.
We have so much more power in the capitalist system than I think a lot of us want or admit, right? Because you and I can stop using plastic bags. Yeah. We can also ask the companies that we work for, be thinking about how we are engaging in our communities and in our supply chains, as consumers, where we purchase, as investors, how we make our investing decisions. Yep. We're not sitting around helpless, right. But we do, we are in a position where I think we need to ask for more.
Speaking of asking for more, the younger generation gets it. They're always like looking for new ways to do things. They are not content with just doing the things as they've always been done. And to that point, I was reading this Axios piece about how MBA programs in Europe and the US are starting to lean in on having, you know, at that level where they're studying, you know, they are the next business leaders of the future, right? So trying to integrate sustainability into their career somehow. So what do you have to say about that and sort of the future of where this movement goes? And I mean, I hate to put the burden of solving all our problems on the younger generations because they didn't create these problems. They've inherited them. But I'm also really grateful that they are thinking in this outside of the box way.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I actually have the privilege of teaching a class at Purdue University a couple days a week where I teach business planning for social entrepreneurs. So I teach the students who are, 20, eight, what are they, 19 to 21, and they're still full of optimism and hope and also the crushing weight of where the world is going to go. And their job is to understand what is an issue. I use the Sustainable Development Goals as a rubric, because those are very non, they're global. They choose one thing that they're interested in, and then they have to figure out what is the solution that they want to fix and how are they going to use a business model to do it. And so I have one group that's figuring out how do we improve access to solar for farmers. I have one group, obviously it's Purdue, so there's a lot of agriculture. How do we take chicken poop and how do we turn that into a renewable resource for farmers where it's a revenue generator for them and it's a new product for home gardeners? I give myself goosebumps in the process. The quality of work and effort that these students have put in is like nothing I've ever seen, and their ideas are good. And so it makes sense to me that we're not, when you and I came out of school, I'm making an assumption that we're about the same age. When I got my master's, the first thing we learned on in day one was the job of a business is to maximize shareholder value. And the unspoken word underneath that was at any cost. And we've lived through Enron and we've lived through the housing crisis. We've lived through firsthand what that looks like. And I think that equation was not the full equation.
It was a dated equation.
Yeah, it was the best we had at that time with the information we had, and now we know it's possible. We've seen the repercussions and we have new equations.
I love that. I love that. So at GivingSpring, which is your company, what do you do? Are you working with individuals? Are you working with businesses? A combination?
What I do is I help businesses who are saying, we know we need to do ESG, but either we're overwhelmed by it, we feel like it's really political and we don't want to touch it. Or it just feels really hard to help them figure out how do they figure out what they need to be doing? How do they make it accessible? How do they engage their people so that it is not political? And how do they do all of this so that it drives profit?
So what's the answer? How do you talk about it so that it isn't political? And then how do you do it in a way that drives profit?
You anchor it in the business realities. You anchor it in understanding. Here's what our customers are asking for. Here's what our investors are hoping to see from us. Here's how we communicate to them where we're going strategically. Here's how we show our receipts that we're doing what we say we want to do. And here's how we leverage what our peers are doing so that we're not taking on any more risk than we're comfortable taking on.
Is it so if you're a company, let's say you're just exploring this idea of embracing ESGs, you're looking, I presume, at what your competitors are doing and wanting to either match or exceed so that that can set you apart.
Yes, there are sort of five things that I will tell people to look at. First thing they need to understand is what are the risks that are happening in their industry? Because that's like gravity. You can't escape those, so you need to know what they are. And the Standardized Accounting Sustainability Board has put out some great resources that people can go and say, if I'm in agriculture, here are the things I need to be thinking about. The next thing they should do is understand what are their customers asking for? And even in B2B markets, what is your supply chain doing? If you're in automotive, what's GM asking for? Because you need to be aware of those things. Then your customer, your, if you're B2C, your customer data is important. And then from there, what are your peers doing and what do your employees want from you? It's really almost a voice of the customer. You have to go out and understand the whole ecosystem before you can prioritize what's more important. Is water more important or air more important? How do you justify between them? Well, what's the greatest benefit with the least amount of effort? Where do you start? You have to be able to prioritize.
So I guess I would just say, hearing everything that you're saying, understanding how many companies are moving either fully embraced or in the process of embracing ESGs, this isn't going anywhere, despite what the squawking we might hear out of Washington, D.C.
No, the train has left the station, in my opinion. People are using the term ESG less frequently. Now they're using energy transition or sustainability. The lingo is changing. My daughter will be mortified when she knows I use the word lingo. I'm hip to the lingo. The language is changing, but the concepts are business strategy, and they're not going anywhere.
That's good news in my mind. Dora, thank you so much. If people want to read more, or hear more about the work you're doing, how can they find you?
Yeah, absolutely. They can find me at giving-spring.com. I also put out a lot of practical insights on LinkedIn. So I am the only Dora Lutz in the U.S. On LinkedIn.
Wow.
So that, yeah, the benefit of a weird name. So if people want to find me there, I'm happy to connect or chat through any challenges. I know this is really new, and it does not have to be as intimidating as it feels like.
Well, I'm so glad you broke this down for us. And if I get any questions directly from my people, I'm fielding them to you, or I might be back in touch. But thank you so much for your insights.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. And I'm looking forward to reading your book.
Price, we are just cruising not only through the month of April, but through spring. Like, everyone's had their spring breaks now, right?
I think so at this point, as we now creep into mid-April. Like, if you're going to take a spring break, if you're taking one anything later than mid-April, then what's the point? To me, it's a mid-March to, I guess I'm not going to be the spring break law and authoritarian, but it seems like if you're going to take a spring break, it would be in that like mid-March to like mid-April range.
And then that's when you need the break, right? You're about to get out of school in June, so you don't need it to stretch too far. It's sort of like, okay, let me ask you, do you like to eat lunch before noon or after noon?
Usually during the week after, for sure.
Yes, because otherwise dinner is so far away if you eat your lunch at like 11:30.
Amen. Correct. Okay. Sometimes on the weekend it will be before noon, but usually during the week is almost a guaranteed after 12 noon.
I don't remember which kid this was, but one of my kids in high school wanted the 10:45 a.m. lunch period. And I was like, that's breakfast. That is not lunch. So I have the same feeling on spring break. I want it to feel close enough to my, I want it to be equidistant to the last two breaks. I think that routine breaks are very healthy. Anyway, we digress. Today's interview, I don't know if you could tell, but I was so excited to talk to Dora. It's always great when I connect with a guest and we have immediate chatting chemistry, you know, that period before we start hitting the record button, just kind of getting to know each other a little bit. And she's just phenomenal. I love the work that she's doing with ESGs and sustainability and, you know, just trying to help businesses figure out how, you know, look at their social impact and what they can do to do things better. Because, you know, I know ESGs have gotten a bad rap from some on the right, but honestly, it's the most free market thing I can think of. You are responding to, companies are responding to the demands from their customers, from their investors, and I think that's an okay thing. And she helps companies figure this out. And I'm just so glad that people out there like her are working for the better of all of us.
Yeah, that's kind of a big pet peeve of mine in this space, is that sometimes people don't put their mouth where their money is, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you talk about being free market and market-based person, hey, here's looking at you, fellow conservatives. You know, you talk about letting, you know, markets solve things and letting businesses do their own thing. Like, come on, folks, this is bread and butter, exactly, you know, what you should be believing in. If they want to internalize externalities, if they want to run their business a certain way, if they want to handle their accounting in, you know, whatever method they choose, that's their call. And that goes for this in the ESG space. It really irks me in a big way. And I'm not going to get too far down that rabbit hole or soapbox, I should say. But yeah.
Well, it was a breath of fresh air to hear from Dora and to finally have somebody come on the show to break things down for us. And, you know, I might have to have her back sometime, because she was just a joy to talk to. And another Hoosier, you know, we've been we have our states that we tend to focus on sort of accidentally. So Indiana, Florida, Utah, all great fodder for guests on the Eco Right Speaks. But good to go back to Indiana.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's go to Indiana right now, because we got some new members who signed up this past week. And one of those is Richard E. in Indiana. We also have Kale S. in Florida, Steve H. in Alabama, Ellen A. in Oregon, and Darlene S. in Tennessee. Appreciate all of them, and also many others that we did not read off. We just pick a hand randomly picked five to shout out every week here on the Eco Right Speaks. And if you would like to sign up and are not already standing with us, we would love for you to do so at republican.org/join.
Come on, you can do it. It's so easy. You know how the internet works. And then you get a nice newsletter from me every week. And you get to take Angela's fun polls. I love Angela's polls. They're just three questions, kind of finger on the pulse of the moment. And join us. What are you waiting for?
Please do not wait another second. Don't wait another second to hit that subscribe button to get a new episode of the Eco Right Speaks delivered to your device, whatever that may be, wherever you listen to podcasts, every single Tuesday, as we have a new episode that drops on Tuesday. We got some great interviews we've done. Clearly, this is season 8, and there's 7 full seasons before. So if you want to pass the time, if you see somebody that strikes your fancy on the guest list, just hit that listen button. You can go to republican.org/podcast. We got everything right there. Certainly Spotify, Apple Podcasts, many other ways wherever it is you listen to your podcast.
Find us and listen. And if you are on Apple, we haven't asked for this in a while, just throw us a little bit of a 5-star love, because, you know, those reviews help bump us up in other people's algorithm and helps other people find the show. So that is another way that you can help us out.
All right, Chelsea, what do we have coming up next week?
So coming up next week, Price, we're going to shift gears a little bit and talk to Tucker Perkins. He is the host of the podcast Path to Zero and also president and CEO of the Propane Education and Research Council. So I actually am not really sure what I'm going to have in store for listeners, but it will definitely be something a little bit different and another new to us show and another new to us guest.
Well, I can't wait for that. I know our listeners can't wait. We appreciate all our listeners for investing time each week to listen to us, to you, to our guest. We will be back again next week. I hope everybody has a great week, weekend, whatever time, day it is, wherever you are. We just once again thank our Eco Right community. And I can't wait to be with you again next week, Chels.
I will see you then.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of the Eco Right Speaks podcast, brought to you by the team at republicen.org. You can listen to past episodes of the Eco Right Speaks podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And make sure to visit us online to find out how you can sign up to stand with us at republicen.org.